loves his draft picks. And the number of, this is the second thing, beyond the hefty price the Broncos paid. The second thing was that at least a dozen teams, including or not including the Broncos, roughly a dozen teams, had been inquiring just as Denver had. You didn't get that feeling about Aaron Rodgers so much. There were a dozen teams inquiring about Aaron Rodgers. But there were reportedly about a dozen teams looking into Russell Wilson's availability. And according to Jeff Howe of The Athletic and other reporters, Adam Schefter of ESPN, a few even made rather strong offers. But the Seahawks continued to insist that he wouldn't be moved. Now, they were a little clever about that. And we'll develop that point a little bit later on. But we wanted to get the reaction we spoke of at the top of the program tonight from our friend Dr. Rick Perea from Think One. And Rick joins us now. Good evening, Dr. Perea. Thanks for coming on with us tonight. Interesting week, no?
Absolutely, Sandy. It's always fun this time of year, right before the official year starts in the football season, in the off season, if you will. And yeah, it was fun. It was a little bit surprising to me, but nonetheless, nothing surprises me in the NFL anymore, Sandy.
I guess now people can really say they've seen it all, because the scenario, the way it played out yesterday, and you would know this better than I, so I'll ask you. It seemed to shock even the power brokers, even the people on the inside, coaches, general managers, personnel people, administrators, maybe even owners around the NFL. This kind of transaction to bring in an Aaron Rodgers, okay, maybe. Reports had indicated that the Broncos were one of the teams, perhaps the team most interested in Aaron Rodgers if he decided he didn't want to play with the Packers anymore. But to have put this kind of package together, and obviously it didn't happen in a space of 90 minutes, once Russell made his announcement, to have an hour and a half later this announcement come, that the Broncos had put together the kind of package that most thought would be required to get Rodgers. But they're not getting Rodgers, they're getting Russell Wilson instead. And, of course, my question to you would be, aren't power brokers around the league loath to admit that they're surprised by anything? Haven't they seen it all?
Yes, Andy, they have seen it all. And you've been around some of these organizations with me at times, so you understand there's a lot of things that go on behind the scenes.
Right.
I would say this. They're not surprised that there was a deal between Seattle and Denver. They were surprised at the magnitude of the personnel, the draft picks,
right,
that aspect of it. I was surprised. When I heard the deal had went down, I looked at it two or three times because I said to myself, there's got to be something wrong here. Because it was really tilting in one side. You know, one of the things I do, Sandy, in the league as somebody who comes in as a psychologist, in my PhD program, they teach us to look at all the variables, confounding variables, discipline variables, contextual variables. And so we look really deep at why things happen and how they happen. And so when I look at a trade like this, Sandy, and an exchange, I look deeper. And I know the Bronco fans are excited. I've heard it the last few days. But it's my job to have what I call the antithesis. And if you break down that word antithesis, it means antithesis.
Right.
And that competes. That competes with the general populace. And I'll say this, Sandy, I hope I'm wrong. I hope I'm wrong. But I think Seattle really got the betterment in this deal. Let me tell you why.
All right.
Russell Wilson is a dual threat quarterback. Okay?
Right.
And he's 33 years old. When you look at Aaron Rodgers at 38, Tom Brady at 49, 44, whatever he is, you know, those are pocket passes.
Yeah.
They, they can sit in the pocket, and they basically just need an average arm. They love what they do well is from the neck up, the mental side, the inspiration that they provide. But Russell Wilson is a dual threat quarterback. He needs those legs to make plays. The Russell Wilson cannot just sit in the pocket and play NFL big boy football. He can't do that. So what I want people to understand is, as a 33-year-old dual threat quarterback, that's a lot different than a pocket passing quarterback. And so even though he's a multiple Pro Bowl player year in and year out, I know people, I know specific people that have graded him in the last year and a half at losing a step and being able to create separation from the defense. So to give up two first rounders, two second rounders, I believe a fifth rounder, and then the players, no offense, who if developed right, can be a top five tight end in the league. And then Shelby is a bona fide, you know, everyday starter. It just really lends me to think, Sandy, that we have a little bit of groupthink mentality. And let me tell you what I mean by that.
All right.
Groupthink mentality means that people influence each other to think and perceive in similar ways. And it reduces a dissonance, an imbalance. It's easy to agree. I've sat in draft rooms, Sandy. I've sat in draft rooms and hear people make an argument for a certain player, and the rest of the people around the table get sore necks because they sit there and nod in agreement instead of saying, wait a minute, you know what? I disagree. This kid's a stop. He's a point of attack kid. I think we should take a hit that plays better in space. And so what happens is this groupthink mentality takes charge. I can tell you this. I know Mike Tannenbaum really well. He was our executive vice president with the Dolphins when I was working for the Dolphins as their performance psychologist. And I know he made a statement at one point during the last 30 days, 45 days, that says Denver is a quarterback away from being a Super Bowl contender.
Right.
That took off like wildfire. And so now I believe, this is my belief, I believe that caught the ear of a lot of people, and they started thinking, huh, about 7 years ago, didn't something similar to this happen? That Denver picked up a quarterback that took them over the top and allowed us that 2015/February 16 year to win a Super Bowl.
Yeah.
So what I think happens, there was a little bit of an oversimplification of thought process. We're close. Let's get this quarterback, and this will take us over the top. I would say this, Sandy. It's not the same team, not the same defense we had in 2015.
Right, or even in 2011. I get that. From the psychological point of view of an organization, though, and I know George Payton has only been here for a little more than a year now, been about 14 months. However, he knows the recent history of the organization. And when you have a position as important as quarterback, and you've been so unsuccessful in going through as many as 10 different starting quarterbacks over the last 6 years, none of them have close to the profile of a Russell Wilson, and you know you can't continue to be that bad at the quarterback position, down where the Bears have been the last 6 years, down where the Jaguars have been, although they think they've found their man again, if properly developed, in Trevor Lawrence. As bad as the Giants have been at the quarterback position, the Jets have been at the quarterback position, when your quarterbacking has been so poor, even if you aren't getting prime Russell Wilson, you're getting someone who still has been, over that same stretch of time, one of the 10, if not one of the 5 best quarterbacks in the league. And my question to you, one I raised at the beginning of the program, would be this. For not even just the fan base, but for the organization itself, isn't it tremendously uplifting psychologically now to have someone who has been so successful except for this past season, winning seasons every year when it's been 5 years, Dr. Perea, since the Broncos last had a winning season.
Yeah, absolutely. It's definitely going to give them an injection of energy and passion into the organization. But, Sandy, what happens next year if it doesn't turn out in a positive way, if he does not produce on the field to the level of expectations? You know, I mean, it's a safe pick. It's a safe pick for George and for John and those guys because, you know what, the way to develop quarterbacks is bring them in as young bloods, develop them in your system. Because here's another thing, Sandy. Here's another variable. Here's a confounding variable that I want people to think about. What do you think an offensive lineman feels like blocking for Russell Wilson? I mean, let's just be honest here, okay? I have offensive linemen that are my clients in the league. And when they block for a quarterback that is a dual threat guy, when he's back there scrambling, guess what? They got to hold their block for 8 seconds, for 9 seconds, not two or three, okay? Three-step drop, boom, the ball is out. They got to hold their block. There's a lot of variables that go into a dual threat quarterback. And I just think that in my opinion, it's a safe pick for George because, yeah, he has a record. He has proof. I don't think he comes in here and lights it up, Sandy. I just don't see that happening. I think, you know, just because there has not been success in the last several picks that they've had a quarterback, they can't get gun shy and stop going after a top first or second round guy. They just have to know how to do their analysis from the neck up. Everyone knows this, Sandy. You don't need a PhD to know this. The best quarterbacks in the league are developed from the neck up, okay? When they leave college and they come into the NFL, Sandy, they don't get shorter. Their arm doesn't get weaker. They don't change in terms of their ability to scramble and extend plays. What changes is the mental side of the game, the neck up, the inability to regulate anxiety, to understand the coverages, the complexity of the coverages, and still be able to perform at a peak level. So what needs to happen is teams that can develop quarterbacks from the neck up, i.e. Seattle, New England, teams like that year in and year out, understand that process. Sandy, I've been in enough rooms, and you know it, and I've been in enough organizations that the top people, the GMs, the EVPs, do not completely understand the psychological aspect of developing a quarterback, and they pay the price, and we've seen it here in Denver.
Well, we certainly saw it with Paxton Lynch, and absolutely, whether he was willing or capable of being developed, we can all debate that. But every other move they've made, going back to the day Brock Osweiler left as a free agent following the retirement of Peyton Manning, every other move they've made at quarterback has failed. I guess Drew Locke would be another one who was drafted, but he was drafted on the second round. I don't know that the smart people thought that a second round pick was necessarily going to come in here and turn everything around. There was that expectation with a first round pick with Paxton Lynch. I want to get to the whole idea that you raised now about expectations, because some football people did speak out, not by name, but anonymously today, so that they could speak frankly about this deal and about expectations. And that's an important part of this conversation, too. So if you could hold, we'll come back to you on the other side, Rick, if that's okay.
Absolutely, Sandy.
All right. We will continue with Dr. Rick Perea on Denver Sports Station, 104.3 The Fan. Sandy Club with Sean Rotar, who is out of town this week. He will be returning on Tuesday night. And we will get him before this week is out. We will have him on to react all that. Tomorrow we have him. Dante, very good. Very good job. And we will continue our conversation now with Dr. Rick Perea of Think One. And I think you're right about the expectations side of this. If you've listened to this radio station over the last couple of days, you know that among hosts and fans, expectations have gone from perhaps even with a new coaching staff, new owner, a second-year GM, maybe even a good draft this year, expectations without either Rodgers or Wilson involved, centered on perhaps another last-place finish. A better team than last year, but maybe the same finish. Now people are talking Super Bowl, and I just want to bounce a couple of reactions delivered today to The Athletic from NFL people, coaches, and executives, and I'll just pick out two. They're a little bit different, and see which one makes more sense to you. The first one from a coach says, Seattle really helped themselves, but Denver will be dangerous. An executive said, if the Broncos win the Super Bowl in 3 or 4 years, they'll have won the trade. The question to follow up, but what if they don't? Here's the answer. It's only a win for Denver if they win the Super Bowl, and I don't think they will be good enough. That comes from a general manager, and that one seems to mirror your position. Am I right about that?
Absolutely. The only way Denver wins this trade is they have to win the Super Bowl in the next, I would even shorten that window to 2 years, because, I mean, now we're talking about a 35-year-old Russell Wilson, and I just don't see it. You know, Sandy, I understand the fans' excitement. I understand a lot of the people's excitement at the fan. But we've got to temper that. We've got to be analytical about these things. You know, one of the things, like I told you, that I noticed in working in the NFL is there is a lack of analysis oftentimes. And I was talking to Julius Thomas, who played for the Broncos recently, who's actually getting his doctorate in psychology down in South Florida. And we were talking about the lack of analysis and how teams would do better, not only to have performance psychologists on staff, but to have an analyst on staff that can check people's decision-making. We see it in the corporate world all the time. We have people that can check people's ego at the door and say, hey, let's look at the decision-making in this organization. I think Denver fans should be very excited about the new coaching staff. I think that's something they can really hang their hat on. I just hope that a team like Denver is not banking on a quarterback to take them over the top and try and win it quickly in 2 or 3 years like it happened 7 years ago, because I just don't think that's the recipe. This team doesn't have the same defense. But whoever that GM was, and it doesn't matter who it was, whoever that GM was that says they've got to win the Super Bowl or they lose this deal is right on the money, Sandy, because this is a high-risk, high-reward deal. And it sounds very sexy. It sounds very sexy on the surface. But the more you look at it, and the more you look at it in depth and how teams build through the draft, those two number ones, those two number twos, that's potentially four really not only starters, but potentially Pro Bowl players.
Well, the two firsts, absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah.
Absolutely. And one of them is the number nine pick this year. You would hope a top 10 pick could be an All-Pro someday.
Absolutely. And contribute to your organization for 6, 7, 10 years, whatever it may be. So all I'm saying, Sandy, is I hope I'm wrong. I love to be wrong because that means I'm learning, baby. But I'll tell you what, I don't think I am wrong in this situation. I love the Denver fans. I want Denver to be successful. But I think we got to be a little more analytical and slow down, pump the brakes a little bit when we look at this trade.
All right. I'm going to follow up simply by asking you, because there are a few things floating around here, and I want to know if you think they're intertwined or they're separate. Some would say that as good as Wilson still may be, he's in a division with Mahomes and Herbert, and at the very least, a very good quarterback in Derek Carr. And so he may not be good enough in a division that even by comparison with the NFC West might be stronger at the quarterback position. Then there's the idea that even if Wilson is 90% of what he was in his prime, it will still take a lot of work and maybe more than a year or two to fill all the other holes that exist. Remember that general manager said, I don't think they will be good enough to win the Super Bowl in the next 3 or 4 years. Are those two intertwined or are they separate in your mind?
They're separate. They're independent because one of the things that happens in this league, Sandy, is we make these variables interdependent, and that's a mistake. We've got to keep them separate and independent. You know, just because Kansas City has a good quarterback, just because San Diego has a good quarterback, that doesn't mean the Denver Broncos have to have a good quarterback. This league, for this to be true, Sandy, for years this has been a copycat league. And the reason it's a copycat league, because there's a lack of analysis. I'll go back to that again. We've got to keep the variables independent. So Denver can win differently than Kansas City and San Diego and even the Raiders. And they've got to figure out what their style is and what their methodology is. I can tell you in listening to the head coach, he seems very creative. Yeah. He seems very innovative. But he's a first-time CEO. Sandy, you've been around the Miami Dolphins and been around Adam Gase when he's made statements like, man, I can't even coach football because I got 8 things pulling on my attention before I even think about coaching football. Today's head coach is more of a CEO than he is in terms of X's and O's.
Right.
The coordinators, the offense and the defensive coordinators are really the orchestrators of the offense and defense. And if we don't have great coordinators, we're not going to perform to our peak level. But teams have got to understand the neck up, the psychological aspect of motivation, performance, and that. It starts, number one, with the guy who puts his hands under center. And if we don't understand how to develop quarterbacks, not just in Denver, but anywhere, we've got to really take a look at our organization from top to bottom and figure that out. Because it's the organizations that do that win year in and year out.
The other part of this is the idea of how a quarterback, and I understand because Brady's played into his 40s and it looks like Rodgers might well play into his 40s, that people are assuming Russell Wilson, who from everything I've heard is a workout warrior, keeps himself in tremendous shape. He's only missed 3 games as a starting quarterback in a decade. So the assumption is that the Broncos, and I made this assumption at least in part, by getting someone who is at the present time 33 over somebody who's roughly 5 years older than that, the Broncos had 2 or 3 years to win with Rodgers had they gotten him. They have 5 to 7 years. Some have suggested more than that, but I think realistically 5 to 7 years. And it seems to me from what you're saying, if not physically, then psychologically, maybe. You're talking about a 15 to 17 year career for Russell Wilson, who's been sacked a hell of a lot more times over his first decade in the league than Tom Brady ever was, than Aaron Rodgers ever has been.
Yeah. And, you know, another variable here, Sandy, is I know Russell Wilson's mental coach, Trevor Moad. He passed away, unfortunately, about a year ago. Trevor was a great guy in the industry. So I know what Russell's been exposed to. I know what he's been taught. And he's been taught by one of the best. I have a lot of respect for Trevor. But here's the thing. Again, a dual-threat quarterback is much different than a pocket quarterback, especially psychologically, Sandy. There, like you said, how many sacks has he taken? How much, you know, tackles for loss has he taken and really impacted the team emotionally and psychologically? You know, one of the factors we've got to ask ourselves, if we want to talk on a complex level or a simple level, let's go simple for a moment, okay? Would the Seattle Seahawks depart with a quarterback that can help them win games, truly win games? I know there's money involved. I know there's a lot of other variables involved, but you know what? I have never seen an NFL team trade away a quarterback. There's a couple examples when it's a team is in a dispute with the quarterback. But why would you depart with your girlfriend when she's the best-looking girl in the school? You know, it just doesn't happen very much, Sandy.
Right.
What happens is people depart with quarterbacks when they no longer can perform at an in-depth level. You know, with him making plays, extending plays with his feet, can he do that? Yes. But can he do it to the level that he once did? I don't think so, and I'm not sure it was worth everything that Denver gave up.
Well, again, one of the comments today, I think it's a reach by Denver for a player past his prime who is a below-average leader, that from a general manager. And yet another general manager said, I have no idea why Seattle would trade Russell Wilson. But you're right, the two quarterbacks that I can remember in the history of football who have left teams that they spent more than a decade playing for and won Super Bowls after that were Tom Brady and Peyton Manning. That's it. That's the list. So, again, in historical terms, the chances of this producing not just an improved Bronco team, but a Super Bowl champion within the next 3 or 4 years, history says the chances of that aren't great. So I think more than one thing can be true, and I think you do too. The Broncos needed a jolt. Definitely, yes. Right?
Yes. Yes. And you know what, Sandy? That's probably the best argument right there. This team is up for sale.
Right.
And you know what? When people sell a house, what do? They stage it. They stage
Absolutely.
It. They want it to look pretty and shiny.
That's right.
Well, guess
That's
what?
Right.
The Broncos want this organization to look pretty and shiny. We're doing things. We're acquiring quarterbacks, all-pro quarterbacks. We're not just sitting on our hands. We're actually showing up to the dance, and we're out on the dance floor. That's another aspect. They want to look shiny
yes.
for this sale that's coming up. But you're right. Whoever that GM was, Sandy, that you said just a few minutes ago, whoever that GM was, they were right too. And he said it first. I did not. Russell Wilson has the reputation around the league at being a below average leader, a below average verbalization guy. Like I said, I know the guy that's worked with him. His constant motive with Russell is be more verbal. Be more vocal with your guys around you. You know, one of the things we taught Ryan Tannehill, when I got to Miami, Ryan Tannehill was a church mouse. He was quiet as can be. But we got him verbal. We got him vocal. He ended up leading us to a 10-6 season, the first time Miami won in years.
Right.
Then he got hurt. But then when he went to Tennessee, he became the 2019 Comeback Player of the Year. Why, Sandy? Not because of his feet, not because of his arm,
right.
but because he became more of a leader, verbal and vocal, and he understood how important that is. So I think there's a lot of confounding variables that the average fan has not considered yet. And I'm not saying I'm smarter, I have more information. I'll just tell you what, my experience in the league is the NFL needs to be more analytical, not only when they trade, but when they draft players. You know, one of my friends who works in the front office in the NFL said, we might as well just turn around and throw a dart at the dartboard, and that'd be about as good as we would do as we're doing right now
right.
with our top first 4 or 5 rounders. So, you know what, Sandy? I hope I'm wrong, but I'll tell you what. This trade was heavily weighted, I think, in the Seahawks' favor.
Well, certainly in terms of quantity, it was, as we described earlier. Appreciate your candor, Dr. Perea, as always. Thank you.
Absolutely. Again, I love you, Bronco fans. I love you, Broncos. But I got to tell it like I see it. But I'll tell you this, Sandy. I love you. I appreciate you. I just want to tell everyone out there, keep loving each other. Keep trusting and believing each other. We need more love out there in the world.
Absolutely. Thank you. Appreciate it. There he goes, Dr. Rick Perea, and quite a bit to react to on that front. And we'll open up our phone lines as we did last night. We got calls from coast to coast. We'll open up the phone lines tonight at 303-713-1043.